Welcome to Haunted Hospitality, Southern Stories Told by Spooky Gingers. I'm Robin.
And I'm Zoe.
We didn't talk about what to say after this.
No! So I guess a brief introduction of, I know you said you're Robin and I said I'm Zoe, but...
Maybe we should talk about what we're doing with this podcast.
Yeah, just what this podcast is.
Well, basically what we're doing is telling Southern stories in... four-ish, different-ish, genres-ish.
Ish, yes.
Yes.
So ghost stories, that's true one. Crimes.
Mm-hmm. Paranormal. Because okay, some ghost, yeah. Some paranormal stories aren't ghost stories. So, right. Like, if there's a particularly interesting poltergeist.
Or.
Demonic.
Right.
Tattoos.
Or Bigfoot.
Oh, we're doing Bigfoot.
I think we should do Bigfoot, too.
Okay. Maybe we'll do Bigfoot someday.
If there's, is the Bigfoot in the South?
I genuinely don't think so.
There is
another creature, though.
Oh?
The Altamahaha.
The Altamahaha?
Yes. The Altamahaha is a kind of, think Loch Ness Monster, but in a river in South Georgia, which is actually very near where our story today is taking place.
Well, then you better do that one, because I don't know how to spell that, so you can do it.
I'll do the Altamahaha. Also, real quick, there is another genre we forgot. Unsolved mysteries.
Yes.
Because okay. Sometimes you're like, is this paranormal? Is this true crime? Is it science? We don't know. So basically...
Is it a figment of all of our imaginations? Probably.
So basically, again, Southern storytelling of a spooky nature.
So, Southern to us means, let me see if I can pull up my map.
She's very official. She created this map, guys, because we found two maps of the South, and we both disagreed with both of them.
Oh my god!
And then we kind of had to haggle with each other over what states are Southern and what states are not. So she can't find, it's taking her a bit to find the map right now. So I'm going to tell you the states that are in there, because I remember a lot of them.
You do? Okay, cool.
We're talking Texas. We're talking Louisiana. We're talking Tennessee, we're talking Mississippi, we're talking Alabama, Georgia, Florida, all of Florida, that was part of a contention. South Carolina, that's where we are. North Carolina and Virginia.
Okay.
And did I miss any, Zoe?
I don't know, I wasn't listening to you.
Can I see the map?
Virginia, Kentucky, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas.
Wait, we have Arkansas and Kentucky?
Yes, we have Arkansas and Kentucky.
I was not aware of that. Okay, we're expanding our searches.
Kentucky's very Southern. Like, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Okay. Listen, I'm not disputing it. I was not
We'll talk
aware.
About that later.
Okay, fine.
I mean, I showed you the map.
Congratulations,
but...
Arkansas and Kentucky. You're newly inducted into the South.
Okay, but we did say no Oklahoma.
No Oklahoma.
Sorry, Oklahomans.
Oklahomans? Homians.
Homians?
Oklahomiosapiens.
Oklahomosexuals.
Yes. So a brief thing about, I just kind of want to take you through a bit of the afternoon, or actually it was kind of like a whole day. So recently Zoe and I spent the whole day with each other on accident. it wasn't planned for that. But anyway... We were driving. All of these conversations happen in cars, but at different times. So we were driving.
There was that one point where the conversation did happen while your head was on my lap.
I genuinely don't...
On my couch, right over there.
I remember that. I don't remember talking about a podcast.
Well, we were talking about spoopy things.
Okay, fine. There were three moments of conversation. Two happened in cars at different times. One happened where I had my head on a pillow on Zoe's lap on a couch. With YouTube playing. So the first moment, Zoe was driving me because my car broke down.
Yes.
And we were talking about podcasts we mm-hmm. liked. And I was talking about a paranormal podcast I like.
Go ahead, drop the name.
Real Life Ghost Stories. It's great. They're like Irish and English accents, and it's just fantastic. And Zoe was talking about a podcast she liked.
And That's Why We Drink, which is just... the funniest podcast out there until now.
And anyway, there was some overlap because both of them involve spooky things, sometimes ghost. Mine was purely ghost stories. Mm-hmm. Yours was kind of ghost stories or true crime.
Paranormal or true crime. They cover aliens too.
Yeah, okay. And so we were kind of like, okay, we both like it. And then I think in that conversation, you had said, you know, I really want to start a podcast. I don't know what about, though. And then I said, I want to start a podcast, but I know what it's about. And it was a completely different subject than what we're doing
right now. Completely, 100%.
So just know that that was just like a thread we did not take. A little bit later, I have my head on Zoe's lap because I am tired, and later she makes me coffee. And we are talking about true crime, paranormal mysteries, and kind of like, well, the one we were talking about specifically was
the Cecil Hotel. Yeah.
Cecil Hotel, Elisa Lam. And we were just having a really nice
conversation.
And we were both obviously very interested, and one could argue knowledgeable, one could argue not knowledgeable at all about it.
I did Google how to play the elevator game and try to explain it to you very confusedly.
You weren't being confusing, the instructions were being confusing.
To be fair, the game is pretty confusing.
Yeah, it's a lot of numbers, and when she told me those, they just, everything flew out of my head, and I'm like, okay, an elevator, I've got that point. Yeah, so later in the day, because now we're at evening time, people.
Yes.
Zoe and I passed a Whataburger, which does not exist in the South, I guess, except for this one point in South Carolina.
Right.
And at that point, and I don't know why, Zoe said, you know what we could do? And I was like, what can we do? And then she was like, I'm pointing to her, and she's not getting the cue.
I see, okay. I know I can picture the scene where we pass it. I think my first suggestion was to do a podcast because we both had been talking about spooky shit that day. And I was like, oh, we should do a podcast about spooky shit, but to stand out from the crowd because there's so many spooky shit podcasts, as I am now calling it, solely calling it.
We should have just titled our podcast that.
Spooky shit? Yeah. Yeah.
Of the South.
Of the South.
Wait, spoiler, sorry.
But so I was like, oh, well, we live in South Carolina. Robin and I met in South Carolina. So we know South Carolina a lot. We've been to Charleston together. We grew up in Columbia. I was like, oh, we can just do a podcast about spooky shit in South Carolina.
Drinking game for this podcast. How many times do we say the word South Carolina? And then I kind of countered that with, what if we do the South? Because I was feeling if we just did a South Carolina thing, I mean, I think it's kind of nice to have a niche podcast, but it's very niche to the point that I think that, like, maybe we get the most traction on, like, tourism websites.
Right.
Versus if we do the South, then there's a lot more to cover. There's a lot more different conversations we could be having.
Right.
And so, yeah, we wanted to do this because, like Zoe was saying, we know the South very well. I've lived here my entire life, and by here I mean the South in general, because I have been ping-ponging across the Southeast my entire life. But Zoe...
Yeah, so I'm a military brat, but my parents separated when I was 4, so I've been living in South Carolina since I was 4. Before that, probably the longest area I lived in was Missouri. But I was born in North Carolina, so I don't claim my Southern heritage. I don't call myself a Southerner because my family's from Massachusetts. My grandparents have been down here for a while. My mom's been down here for a while. I've been down here for a while. It's gotten to the point where my grandparents will use a BB gun to shoot the squirrels out of their trees. So I think there's nothing more Southern than that. And so they've really come into the culture. However, I still refuse to say y'all, and I do not consider myself a Southerner, though I do acknowledge that I've spent most of my life in the South.
I find it so interesting, because I guess I don't have that kind of experience where you've been here for most of the time you can remember, but your family isn't, because my family, it's just all Georgia on my mind.
Right.
So, yeah. I don't know. Because my first question for you, I was going to ask, when did you consider yourself Southern? And Zoe just ruined that intro.
Yeah, so, yeah, but my mom was a military brat, too, growing up. And so she was born in Texas, but
that's Southern, according to our map.
But she grew up mostly in Washington. However, in the 12 years of K through 12, or 13, whatever, she moved like 12 times. So she was all along the coast because her stepfather was in the Coast Guard. But she moved to Massachusetts, where all of her family is. And she met my father, where all of his family is, in Massachusetts. They got married in Massachusetts. My brother was born in Massachusetts.
Second drinking game. How many times can we say Massachusetts?
And, but then my father joined the Marines. And so we ping-ponged across the United States. And
ooh, a bigger court? Table?
Table? Yeah. Table? I'm a better ping-ponger than you. I'm a better ping-ponger across the United States. Though we didn't go any further west than St. Louis.
South Louis.
South Louis. Yes, I was going to say South Louis. Oh, wait, I have been to Kansas City. No, you're thinking of Louisville.
No, it's
St. Louis.
Okay.
But yeah.
Comment below. This doesn't have comments. Send us an email.
Oh, yeah. So have we said the name of our podcast? Yes, we did at the very beginning.
We managed to get that far.
Yes. So, yes. So, after all that, we did decide that we are going to meet. This was about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, this kind of moved really fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm happy it did. Because yeah. Otherwise, it was just saying I'm going to do a project and then not doing it. And then Zoe was like, we're doing this. And I was really happy about that, you know?
Yeah, it's the only thing I've been able to think of for, like, the last 2 weeks. I've been sitting here and being like, but I want to record now. I want to record now. So it's exciting. Yeah. Like, literally, like, my entire weekend, I've been going through the motions, being like, okay, I have to do this, I have to do this. And then I'm like, but tomorrow, today, we can record.
Before, I swear to you guys, we're getting to a ghost story. And it is a ghost story. Spoiler alert on the genre-ish niche of it. But first thing, I kind of want to ask, Zoe, do you believe in ghosts?
So, that's a long answer.
I mean, we have the time.
True. Short answer, yes, I believe ghosts exist.
Okay.
Long answer, so, my grandmother, my father's father, is like a... Or she was a quarter Cherokee.
You said your father's father.
I'm sorry, my father's mother. She was like a quarter Cherokee.
Okay.
And so, but she actually was raised like in Cherokee tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so she was... I wasn't there for her youth, but...
What? Yeah. Not your grandmother's youth.
So I don't consider myself Native American because I wasn't raised like that.
Yeah.
But, so she definitely believed in spirits and ghosts and energies and the nature of the world and all of that. I was born with red hair and with my eyes open, which, according to ancient tradition, that means you're more susceptible to seeing ghosts if you have open, if you were born with your eyes open and if you're born with red hair. I don't know why. That's just like the... I guess because redheads are the devil's children. By the way, we're both redheads.
In case you can't tell.
But when I was little, apparently I would always tell my grandma about these, like, five imaginary friends that I had and how I didn't like them very much. And that one of them was very, very mean. And he said, like, he hurt his family. And, yeah... Like, I did, and my grandmother was like, there's no way a 6 or 7 year old kid is sitting here imagining somebody who's mean. You know, they're gonna picture a purple panda, not somebody who's mean. And so my grandmother was convinced that I was seeing the spirits of the people who had died nearby. I have no recollection of this. I do not remember anything.
And you were 5 to 7.
I was 6 to 7. So I should remember it, but I genuinely don't. But I have so many stories that my family has have told me where apparently I saw spooky shit and I just don't remember it.
Oh my God.
And I haven't really had a ghost encounter since I was in my mid, probably hitting puberty, honestly.
So, like, do you remember any of your ghost encounters? Or is it just a blank slate
for you? A blank slate for me. I don't remember anything. Weird.
But it's so interesting.
My family constantly tells me, oh, I remember when you were a kid and you did this. And I'd be like, I have no idea what you're talking about. What about you, Robin? Do you believe in ghosts?
I want to.
Okay.
So, okay. I have had experiences that lend me to, that could possibly have been ghostly experiences. For example, but then again, it could also be a wild imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was little, and by that I mean maybe three or so, like I've always been so afraid of ghosts.
Okay.
For one thing, like to a point that, like, now that I think about it, I think it's to a weird extent.
Really?
Because, like, as far back as I can remember, I've been terrified of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would constantly be checking the mirror that was across from my bed.
Okay.
Like, as a child. And then, so I slept with my door open to my bedroom when I lived in Macon, Georgia from, like, ages 1 to 9. And I thought I saw, and this is, like, where it gets, like, very cliche, a white ephemeral, so kind of see-through, tall, very tall, skeleton wearing a wedding dress and veil and carrying flowers and walking into my parents' room at night. And the thing is, the reason...
Did you watch Corpse Bride recently before you saw that?
Is that one of those,
3D and yeah, yeah.
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think I've seen Corpse. I might have seen Corpse Bride once in high school. But no, I saw that. And one thing it could have totally been, because I think it was like just seeing white out of the corner of my eye and then just like moving my head real fast, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then imagination filling in the gaps. But at the same time, I can picture it in my head incredibly clearly.
Right.
Like, I know exactly what this possible ghost looks like. And again, it could be an incredibly vivid imagination. But I remember just always being scared of... There was a train that went by my house, like, several times a day and in the night, right behind the backyard, and I thought it would bring ghosts. I was scared of running water and of mirrors, which, of course, like, running water and mirrors are actually a lot of things that are associated with ghost stories.
Right.
And then, of course, there's some other ghost stories, or maybe mostly one more that I had in college that I'm saving for another time, where a ghost might have shaken my shoulder. I don't know. But basically, I really would like to think that ghosts are real, and I love ghost stories. And I just... would kind of, it's one of those situations where I would love to have firsthand evidence to myself one day that ghosts exist, but at the same time, I'm like, please no, I don't want that. I'm terrified.
So, there's many people, like, what is your thought of what a ghost is? Because to me, a ghost is just memories. I don't think there's a soul bound to, I mean, some of the stronger ghosts could be a soul bound to this realm of existence, but I feel like most ghosts that aren't harmful in any way are memories. So it's like somebody reliving something they did a lot in their life or a traumatic experience in their life. So it's just it was just such something ingrained to the world that we happen to see it years later, even though that person's long gone.
So you don't think of ghosts as something that can interact with you?
I think maliciously? Malicious ones can. But honestly, I've heard a lot of things like, are those ghosts or are those demons?
Oh God, it terrifies me. I think that's a really interesting way to put it. So I've really, for the most part, only thought of ghosts in terms of this is a soul that is bound to the earth for whatever reason. And I think maybe that's one of the reasons that it's so hard for me to wrap my head mm-hmm. around it possibly existing. Just because, you know, as you say it, it sounds odd. And right. just, I don't know. But I really like that kind of thought about memories. And this kind of, like, brings me into another discussion. Like, some of the research I did for this episode has to do with, like, the Gullah Geechee people. Okay. And because they, I read a bit about, like, what they kind of view as ghosts. And so they call them haints.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, they, I think, like, I read that it's, like, they consider people to be made of, like, a body, a spirit, and a soul, and that it's not, ghosts aren't souls, or the haints aren't souls, they're the spirits.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, I think, and again, I don't know a lot about this, so I'm saying this is my interpretation of what I read, or, but I think it means, like, maybe spirits maybe are less individual and more like it's so it's easier to be like this is a good one versus a bad one, because like if you have a good spirit versus a bad spirit like within you, it's right. not so much about your personal soul, I think.
Yeah, no, yeah. That makes sense, because I mean there I have heard stories of ghosts noticing people. Like there's a story of a like a priest or pastor or whatever they're called, he's walking through the church pews, and that like that fits with what my idea of the memory, because he's always walking. But then some people will claim that he'll, like, lock eyes with you. Like, he knows you're there. But if it's a body, a body, a soul, and a spirit, well, then the body just goes into the ground.
Yeah.
The soul goes to whatever afterlife you believe in, and then the spirit stays here. And I'm guessing if you're a strong enough spirit, maybe if you have issues to resolve, or maybe you have a job in the afterlife, maybe that's what keeps you there.
One thing, and so I'm really glad we're having this conversation, because one thing I want this podcast to be about is exploring through these kind of spooky stories the different cultures of the South, because there is not one universal Southern culture. There are, I mean, I'm talking about an island today, and there's multiple within this island, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, it's a whole bunch and, like, coexisting, meshing, fusing together. And I think ghost stories and spooky stories are really interesting ways to see how these cultures really do see things differently, but also, like, combine with, like, oral tradition of these stories. So
right.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, I think that's enough of an intro, unless you had more questions to ask.
I do not have more questions.
All right. Well, let's get into it then. You want to go ahead and tell your first story?
Yes, we're doing it.
Okay. Woo!
I've been so nervous, guys. Okay, so, Zoe.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of Mary the Wanderer?
This is different from Bloody Mary?
Yes, it is.
Okay. You say Mary the Wanderer, and my brain isn't immediately saying, no, I have never heard of that.
Okay.
But I'm picturing a woman in a white dress just walking around, so
that might come into play in a bit. Okay, so for a bit of context, I have done my best to try to find the history and true facts of this, but a lot of this took place in 1824. So some of it might be like tradition more than like based in fact, but here's what I'm trying okay. to, here's the story I'm trying to get to.
Okay.
In the early 19th century, 13-year-old Mary McCrae went from Glasgow to Savannah, Georgia, via ship, along with her brother and her parents, whose names were Argus and Martha.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unfortunately, her brother and her parents, and I think a lot of people on the boat, died from smallpox. So arrives, 13 years old,
in, all by herself.
All by herself, in this entirely new continent. And at this point, I'm going to go ahead and assume there's no plan. Because I'm assuming maybe if the parents came over with a plan, maybe they didn't share it with their 13-year-old daughter to the point that she could do it on her own.
Right.
So what I read is that it was in this church, kind of like, just hang out. Because where else do you go? You go to, like, maybe a public gathering place. And that two people who were also from Glasgow, a couple whose name was Amelia and Jeremy Grant, invited her to join them as they went to this place called the Marston Plantation, close to where they were. And because they had found jobs, and so she worked with them in the stables. And this is, so far, this is from one account I read. Basically, the consensus is she was a Scottish immigrant, but I could not find a second source for this information.
Right.
But anyway, they went to the Marston Plantation, and she worked in the stables. Eventually, this guy named Raymond DeMere came to Marston Plantation, and the DeMeres, okay, their name also might be Demery, but, like, I'm just gonna say DeMere, okay? Raymond DeMere, I'm unsure if this is, like, the father or the son, because there are four straight Raymond DeMeres in a row.
Okay.
It began with Captain Raymond DeMere, who fought alongside General Oglethorpe, who in my...
Oglethorpe.
Have you never heard that name before?
I have not, no. Oh, you know what? Now that you say it, there's a Kyle Oglethorpe in our high school. No, I'm kidding.
You could tell me that's the case, and I would believe you. People keep mentioning people we went to high school with, and I'm like, all right.
I have no idea who you're talking about. Sure, yeah,
definitely. I remember them. Anyway... Okay, listen.
So Captain DeMere fought with Oglethorpe?
Oglethorpe. And I think Oglethorpe founded the state of Georgia.
Okay.
But to be honest with you, I'm not completely sure on that. So just take my word for it that colonialism, he was given a plot of land in South Carolina.
Oglethorpe was.
No.
Raymond DeMere. DeMere.
Captain Raymond DeMere.
Okay.
Was given a plot of land in St. Simon's Island, Georgia.
Okay.
So we're talking colonialism, we are talking slave trade, we are talking some not good times. So fast forward, he has a son named Raymond DeMere.
Of course he does.
Is like the head of the plantation. And the plantation is called Mulberry Grove. He is the head of the plantation, and then he has another son, also named Raymond DeMere.
So the third?
Third. This was very confusing to research. And I am unsure if it was Raymond Jr. or Raymond III that invited Mary from the Marston Plantation.
Gotcha.
To join them over in St. Simon's Island at Mulberry Grove.
Okay.
Anyway, she went to Mulberry Grove. Also, another thought is that, like, it might have even been, like, Raymond DeMere's own plantation, the Marston one, because I read his will, and there was, like, a thing that was, like, I read an abstract from his will, and there was a thing that was, like, this place in McIntosh County, and it's, like, it said Martin Plantation or something similar, and then it had a question mark by it, like, it wasn't sure if that's what he actually wrote down, so I'm wondering if it was Marston, and that it was his space anyway.
Okay.
That's not really important.
Okay. Anyway, Junior or the third invited Mary.
Junior or the third invited Mary. This is a grown-ass man. Invited Mary to join.
And she's still 13.
You know, she might be a bit older at this point.
Okay.
It's really hard to tell.
Okay.
Specific dates. Maybe just assume, just because time happens and it's, like, hard to travel, maybe she's, like, 15 at this point. I really don't know.
Okay.
So she joins at Mulberry Grove, and it's kind of unclear what she does there because... words I have found were that she was a servant for them. I've also heard that she was a ward for them.
Okay.
Because she does come in as an orphan. And another word was adopted.
Okay.
Now, my take from this is that maybe she was something between, like, working for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, because I don't think it was adopted to the sense of, like, she is part of their family now. You know? Raymond DeMere III had a son. Actually, he had four sons.
And they were called Raymond, 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 and Raymond.
They were called Raymond. One of them, I think, was Joseph. Another one was, and anyway, it doesn't matter. So
Raymond the Fourth.
What we know. Okay, actually, there was a Raymond the Fourth, and it's so confusing because, like, even on the webpage where I found his name, it, like, the headline was Raymond the Third, and I'm like, no, it's Raymond the Fourth. Anyway, we know that Mary falls in love.
Oh, no.
With one of the four sons. Now, here's what was tossed around on the sites I frequented.
Okay.
The name Lamont. Okay. Another thing was just one of the sons, like they don't know which one. And the other option was Raymond.
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta tell you, it was Raymond. I would have loved for it to have been any other name but Raymond.
Uh-huh.
But it was Raymond.
Okay.
And
that's she fell in love with. It was Raymond.
Yes. Okay. And the thing is, I did a little bit of digging to find that out, but mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you why I know that because it comes up later.
Okay. So okay. She fell in love with Raymond the Fourth or Raymond the Third?
Lord. Okay. She fell in love with Raymond the Fourth.
Okay.
Who was
the son of Raymond the Third.
Who was the son of Raymond the Second.
Who was the son of Captain Raymond.
Yes. Okay. She fell in love with him, and one source I read said that it was a bit of a weird thing between the father and the son, because it's like maybe Raymond the Third liked her too, which is weird because at this point she's like a teenager.
Yeah, but in the 1800s, there's 40-year-olds marrying 12-year-olds.
Really?
Yeah. In the rich, sure? In the rich areas, yeah.
Well, this would count as the rich area. The idea from like one of these sources is that, and this kind of screams of, like, just a lot of awkwardness for her and a lot of weird power dynamics. I mean, to be honest, I think falling in love with any of the demure screams of a weird power dynamic. I mean, these people
right.
own slaves, and she's, like, working for them, but also kind of with them. It's a kind of a weird situation.
Right.
And
never was the word indentured servitude used, right?
I mean, I didn't see it. That doesn't mean that's not what was going on.
Okay.
But I really don't know. There was very... I found a lot of information on the Demirs. I found very little information on Mary unfortunately. Okay. But the... Okay, so one of the sources I saw said that Mary... she really... So she missed working in the stables. She loves horses. Raymond III saw an inn and was like an inn to her, not like a hotel. He was like, hey, listen, I have a horse I could give you. And then she's like, you know, I don't really know how to ride horses, but thank you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, I'll teach you how to ride horses. So now she's on a picnic with this guy as he's about to teach her to ride a horse. And this source says that, by the way, the source is Haunted Georgia by Alan Brown.
Woo!
Yes. And it says that Raymond the Fourth galloped up his own horse, and then he kind of rescues her from having a picnic with his dad, an awkward power weirdness picnic.
Okay.
But still, he just picks her up from a picnic, and they go back to the stables and confess their love. To be honest with you, I think this is, I don't know, this was the only place I saw that information, but to be honest, this is the only source where I saw, like, the information on her name and, like, that she was from Glasgow specifically and stuff. Okay. Other sources just say she was a Scottish immigrant named Mary who was an orphan. So the whole thing with the horse might have happened, but totally and completely, basically it seems that she and Raymond the Fourth started seeing each other
mm-hmm.
and that they were in, like, kind of secret courtship and that they were getting more serious. And I don't exactly know if they were found out or if it was a thing where Raymond the Fourth confronted his father and gotcha. Said, you know, I want to marry her. It's, so we don't really know. The common idea of it is that they were engaged, but I don't really know that for sure.
Okay.
Anyway, basically, the discovery of their relationship ended up with a huge blowout fight between, like, probably verbally. I mean, I don't know if a punch was thrown. A punch could have been thrown. But between Raymond the Third and Raymond the Fourth. Okay, Raymond the Fourth is 20.
Okay.
He did what maybe, like, if you're a teenager, you do when you're mad at your parents. You Slam leave the door. House.
Yeah.
You leave the house. He got in a boat along, I'm going to butcher this name, Gascoigne Bluff.
Okay.
Along the Frederica River, which is the river. So St. Simon's Island is a barrier island, and the Frederica River runs along the east side of the island as like a thin separation between it and the mainland.
Okay.
And so he started off on the boat to Brunswick and Mary the Wanderer, mm-hmm. who at this point was not Mary the Wanderer. She was just Mary, saw him off.
Now, and she stayed in the house.
Yeah, which is like another... The thing they never, like, bring up in the story was, like, was it not a great idea for maybe him to get so mad that he leaves without her?
Yeah.
Because the idea is that he's going off to Brunswick to hang out with some friends because he's pissed at his dad. And I'm like, but maybe
his dad might, like, attack Mary?
Yeah, especially if, like, you're to believe that, like, maybe there was something going on between that Raymond III wanted something to be going on between right. him and Mary. Probably not the greatest idea. This guy goes to Brunswick, and it's fine out at this point, though it is like some weird cloud cover. And now I'm about to read to you a newspaper account from September 21st, 1824, in the Darien Gazette.
Okay.
Describing the previous week when this all went down.
Okay.
Last Tuesday afternoon, the weather was uncommonly dark and gloomy. The wind from the northeast with frequent showers. At 8 p.m., the wind increased to a violent gale. At 9 p.m., to a hurricane, accompanied with noise resembling a heavy surf upon the beach or breakers upon a reef. I thought that was a great line. Oh my goodness. This lasted until about 11 or 12 at night, when a pause of about half an hour, almost to a calm, ensued. At 1:30 a.m., the wind shifted to the southeast and blew a hurricane of redoubled violence, accompanied by tremendous gusts and a noise like that at the Falls of Niagara. This lasted in all its fury with heavy rain until about 4 a.m., when it gradually subsided, and at daylight the weather was mild and pleasant. But who shall describe the wreck and ruin that presented itself to our view when day appeared? Houses, chimneys, trees, and fences prostrate, some unroofed, some tottering, and nearly all without windows. Two vessels, the schooner Thorn and sloop, upon the wharves. Fortunately, no lives were lost in the city, but as the tide was 6 feet above the high water mark, it is to be feared the most dreadful consequences have befallen our surrounding neighbors.
Why isn't news written like that anymore?
I really don't know, but I really, like... Like, I mean, the...
That's just beautiful.
Rhyme, I know, right? The reference to the Falls of Niagara, which is so interesting, because, like, that's on the completely different opposite end of the coast.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, I don't think the Falls of Niagara are actually in the coast. But you know what I mean? Yeah, like, on the east. So that was from Darien, which is a city a little bit more inland and a little bit more to the north of St. Simon's Island. And so they experienced it like this, but St. Simon's Island unfortunately got the brunt of the hurricane, and it was...
Right, because it's a barrier island.
Barrier island. It just would have slammed right into it.
Ooh.
Yeah, and the damage was intense. This was not your average hurricane. This was... Because there was a bad hurricane in 1804 as well, but this one just really took the cake.
Mm-hmm.
And during the eye of this hurricane, Mary went looking for... Raymond IV.
Oh.
She walked from the Mulberry Grove plantation along a certain dirt path mm-hmm. to Gascoigne Bluff. So she is now on the east end of the island where the Frederica River was. And she is looking for his boat.
Oh.
And eventually, so the story says, she sees the wrecked remains in the water. And I forgot to put a content warning into this. Content warning. Suicide, possibly. And the thought is, either she realized he was dead, and she went into the water to drown herself on purpose out of grief,
mm-hmm.
or she went into the water to look for him and hope to save him. I personally think that she went into the water to look for him and right. to save him. And because the thing is, okay, so she started out at the eye of the hurricane,
mm-hmm.
and it mentions the eye of the hurricane. It mentions like a brief calm for maybe like an hour or something, and then it gets a lot worse.
Right.
And so I think she went out during the calm thinking that the storm was over, and then kind of got caught when the storm came back. And basically, she did die.
Okay. And did the fourth die as well?
Raymond IV dived.
Okay.
And I'm going to take a brief moment out of the story to bring up something that the traditional Mary the Wanderer tale doesn't include.
Mm-hmm.
There were four enslaved men with Raymond the Fourth on the boat with him.
Oh.
And that is, I only found this when looking up the newspaper, like, account of the hurricane.
Uh-huh.
None of the tales mention that. You know, they'll sometimes mention the Demure family,
mm-hmm.
which are a slaveholding family, but they don't mention how he was found. They don't mention that he wasn't alone. In fact, they actually, some of them say that his body was never found, which isn't true. It was.
Okay.
And obviously the bodies of the four other men were found as well. So this newspaper in particular, I went looking to see if there was any record of Mary dying.
Mm-hmm.
And I might have found it, but I'm not completely sure. So it describes, it gives the names of the white people who died. Because there was actually an engaged couple, or a couple that was thought to be engaged, mm-hmm. that is not Mary and Raymond, who they both ended up dying. They found both of their bodies. And it was kind of really sad because the guy was holding on to, like, maybe like an hour later, layer of clothing of the woman. So the thought was he was trying to pull her back from something and to save her.
Right.
But it didn't work out.
Yeah.
And so, like, it gave that kind of detail for the white people, but when you're talking about the black people who died, that's really not the case. They're given in numbers instead, and they say who they, quote, belong to.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I may have found evidence of Mary dying, but also it's not clear because basically it said one woman who belonged, quote, to Raymond Demure. This would have been the second because the grandfather was actually still alive.
Okay.
Died. And I don't know if that is talking about somebody else, but I'm kind of assuming it might be Mary.
Okay.
But then again, it didn't give a name. And that kind of is also part of, did they not give a name? If it is her, did they not give a name just because she was kind of working for him in some sense? Or should I believe that it's not her because they gave a name to the other white people? I'm not exactly sure about
right.
all that. This is kind of the end of what happened at this point of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so a brief thing for history in general, because we are talking about a plantation. After the Civil War, the Demures, they were no longer with the Mulberry Grove property.
Okay.
And it actually turned into, so the Demures lived in Harrington Hall. That was the main house. And the area around Harrington Hall, after they all left, it ended up becoming actually a black community.
Okay.
And so I kind of wanted to add that in there because it's like, I don't know. I read that and I was happy that something else happened with the land.
Right. It wasn't just given to another rich white person.
Yes.
It was given to, well,
I don't know if
or
it was
taken.
Given, I really don't know how that was all decided.
Okay.
But I'm happy that it became a black community. I mentioned that she walked along this dirt path
mm-hmm.
from Mulberry Grove to Gascoigne Bluff. That path was known and is still known as Mary Wan Road.
Because oh, wow.
she's known as Mary the Wanderer, but by the Geechee people at St. Simon's Island, she is known by two names, Mary DeWanda and Mary Wan. And so it became Mary Wan Road, this path that she would walk, because sometimes she is seen walking along the road.
Okay.
Now, Zoe, you had mentioned
a woman in a white dress walking around.
Yes, and that is, yeah, basically that's how she was seen. And
okay.
the reason I found that so funny is because the descriptions of her ghost are very, I would consider, cliche.
Okay.
Because you have the white dress, her, but they are a little bit varied. One thing I kind of want to bring up before I get to the actual official sightings of her, which mm-hmm. there are a few, is the fact that between 1824 and when the sightings really pick up in the 1940s, there's a lot of development on St. Simon's Island. So if you go there now, and I have visited several times, it is an area with, for one, a lot of large houses,
okay.
some smaller houses. It is basically a very touristy island. And by that, I don't necessarily mean tacky, but I mean, there's a lot of hotels, there's resorts,
okay.
there is basically this thing called a Sea Island golf course, which takes up a lot of land. There's actually also a small airport
mm-hmm.
for kind of rich people who have their small planes to come into, like It's an area for where, like, some, like, you know, you can go there and have an inexpensive vacation, but it's right near this place called Sea Island, which is, like, literally attached to it, and that is a resort for, like, the mega rich.
Gotcha. Okay. Yes.
So basically, it's not this kind of really, it's still this very lush ecosystem with these, like, sprawling live oaks, but the geography of the island has changed because of this.
Okay.
And part of that includes, so the Sea Island Golf Course actually took up a lot of Mary Wan Road, so a lot of it's not there anymore. Okay. It's only this small kind of, I think, 560-foot stretch now. And that kind of brings us to our sightings.
Okay.
So the first is, it is in the 1940s.
Mm-hmm.
John Simons or Simmons? S-Y-M-O-N-S. I'm not quite sure.
I'm not sure. I would assume Simmons, okay. But...
that kind of makes sense because we're on St. Simon's Island and I don't want to just keep saying Simons. So John Simmons and his wife are visiting St. Simon's Island. Now, he was in the Navy and he had just gotten back from deployment. And it is August at 2 a.m. in the 1940s, so there is no air conditioning. Yes, they can't sleep, so they decide, you know, we're going to try to, like, get a breeze going. We're going to drive around the island. So they end up passing the airport, and all of a sudden, in front of their car, they see a woman in a white dress with a veil holding a lantern in front of a horse. That's a lot to take in.
Okay, so, like, she's leading a horse or she's, like, talking to a horse?
I think she's, like, facing the car. I think she's leading the horse.
Okay, okay.
And so it's kind of this funny moment that was described where, like, John Simmons and his wife are, like, sitting beside each other in the car going, do you see that? And they're both like, yeah, I see that. And then they confirm, it's like, yeah, it's a woman with a horse. Yeah, okay, we both see this. And when they see her, it suddenly gets cold.
Oh, no.
I know. And then fog creeps up, like, the windshield and the windows and the back windshield. They can't see in the darn car.
Oh, no.
I don't know why I censored myself there. We already... They can't see in the darn car. And so John Simmons is like, well, I guess I'm still driving. So he opens the door. I'm sorry.
To get out?
No.
Oh, okay.
He opens the door so he can see, because he can't see because of the fog.
So he's currently driving, sticking his head out like a golden retriever?
That's kind of how I think of what's going on. It's not like, because, like, it's not he rolled down the window. It's like he stuck his head out.
Yeah. I guess this is the 1940s. It's not a modern car.
I mean, you can still roll down windows in 1940s.
Yeah, cars. But, like...
I'm not saying he made the best choice I ever had before.
But he probably didn't have, like, a seatbelt, and people... Well, no! How do you even position yourself like that? If you... Because there's no automatics. It's a gear shift. How can you press down?
I have no idea.
I'm very short, and I can't picture...
John Simmons from the Navy wasn't as short as you and I are.
But it's just, like, I can't picture... being able to lean enough to stick your head out the car door and still be able to have both your feet on the pedals. And
you don't drive with both your feet on the pedals.
It's not an automatic. This is the
19... Do you drive with both your feet on the pedals and not automatic cars?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes, there's a third pedal in non-automatic cars.
Maybe he's not... Okay, how about this? Let's assume maybe he put... the brakes on.
Okay, he's not moving forward.
I don't know, Zoe.
Okay.
Okay.
Anyway, so he sticks his head
maybe
out like a golden retriever.
Maybe he's making mistakes and the car's grinding its gears and it's mad at him. I really don't know how good of a driver this man is.
Okay.
All I know is this guy who just came back from the Navy is probably like, man, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen and I've been in the Navy. So he opens the car door, sticks his head out, sees her again. He still sees her. And, okay, this is where I'm kind of confused, because it mentioned he saw her walk, like, 560 feet or something, and I don't know if she was walking or if he was driving. I don't know if both were moving. I don't know if, but somebody wasn't still. I don't know who it was, but somebody wasn't still. And based on the stories, I have to kind of assume that she was walking.
Okay.
Because she's literally the wanderer.
Right.
Yeah.
WandaVision.
I cannot tell you how many times WandaVision came up while I was trying to Google this. Anyway, she... So he sees her, and then suddenly she disappears.
Okay.
Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, 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 dun.
And so does the fog, automatically, immediately.
Right.
And he's like, okay. That's like what I have to assume the that moment was like. So yeah, that's the story for them. And then they just kind of like, I guess, told people.
And then drove off. Yeah. Well, drove off and then told people. Later told
people, yeah. And then, like, I mean, that's kind of clearly Mary the Wanderer, because, like, okay, I forgot to tell you. She's typically seen in a white dress, might be a wedding dress, with a horse. Sometimes with a horse.
Why a horse? Oh, because she wanted to ride a horse.
Well, see, I'm not quite sure if that part of the story was made up because of the horse.
Oh, okay.
Or if the horse was because of that part of the story, because I'm not quite sure where everybody gets their facts from.
Honestly, when you first told me about the horse, I was just thinking of the American Girl, Felicity.
I started to watch that movie, but I never finished it.
I'm sorry, movie? I'm talking about the books.
Okay, get off your high horse. I read Kit and Samantha. High horse! Okay.
Anyway, I read Kit and Samantha, too. And Julie. And another one. Thanks. Molly. Ooh, I loved Molly. Anyway, sorry.
Back to the stories. So this was a cut and dry Mary the Wanderer sighting in the 1940s, which is about 120 years after
her death.
She died. Yeah. Okay. So I'm like, she's sticking around. The next one.
Uh-huh.
Carolyn Butler.
Okay.
She, at one point, taught elementary school. Every single source mentions that. I don't know why. Maybe it's because, like, that's really, like, a trustworthy thing to do. Oh, you're an elementary school teacher? Yeah, I trust you.
You're not going to lie to me, even though you probably lie to your students 12 times a day?
Yeah, exactly. At this point, she was either teaching elementary school or not teaching elementary school.
Yes. Most people in their lives
are either teaching
elementary school or not teaching elementary school. I am currently in the point of my life where I'm not teaching elementary school. I do not plan to change that.
I'm also not teaching elementary school.
That's good. I'm glad we established this.
Yeah, I was really wondering, Zoe. Anyway. Carolyn Butler did not believe in ghosts.
Shame.
Carolyn Butler had a dog named Boots, who was either a boy or a girl.
Okay.
Because, like, everything says, like, he, but in quotes I saw from her, she said she, so I'm assuming it's she.
Right. And people just assume he.
But it's, like, so interesting, because, like, one of the books I read, it was, like, referring to it in he in the same paragraph as she would referring it she.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but then again, that same thing happened with my cat. Like, the pound kept calling her, like, him, and I'm like, but it is a girl, right? Like, we just spayed her.
Yeah, that's concerning. I think you need a new vet.
It was the pound. It was pound. The shelter.
Oh, okay.
I don't think the vet did that.
Wait, are you talking about Remy?
Yeah, I'm talking
okay. about Remy. Okay. Remy, which is the most adorable little ginger cat.
Yeah, I really wanted a girl ginger. I don't know why. I'm a girl ginger. Carolyn Butler did not believe in ghosts. Right. And she had a dog named Boots, and we don't know if Boots believed in ghosts or not, okay?
Okay. Okay.
Carolyn Butler was wearing, like, a bathrobe or something.
Risky move.
She was taking her dog out.
Okay.
And I think the dog was on a leash. I think she lived on the southern part of the island. A lot of this happens on the southern-ish part of the island.
Okay.
Her dog, like, I guess a few houses down or something, started, like, barking a lot.
Okay.
And she saw a white blob floating, like, quote, white blob floating toward her. And she was like, what's this? And the dog was just flipping out.
Okay.
And she was really, like, wondering. Okay, anyway, the white blob got, like, really close to her. The dog was flipping out. She took the dog, which was kind of like kicking and screaming type of thing, and brought it home. But really soon after that, the dog got out.
Oh, no.
Yes. Went to this store on Ocean Boulevard that had never been to before.
Okay.
Ocean Boulevard's another main street in St. Simons. And, you know, she told her husband, she's like, okay, well, we gotta get the dog. And also, I saw a ghost. And then he's like, you didn't see a ghost, because he was, like, just a typical man in every horror movie who's like,
right,
what's happening is not happening.
Yes, anyway, yes.
But she's like...
And what year is this?
It doesn't say. It's sometime okay. before 1978.
1970, okay.
Yes. And so she... they go, they retrieve the dog from the store,
mm-hmm.
and they bring it back, but the dog is restless, and it won't stay in the house another night. Every night, it gets out, and it runs somewhere else, because it is just terrified of the location now after seeing the white blob.
Oh my gosh.
They eventually have to give the dog away, just because the dog keeps getting out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
See, my first thing would be, okay, I guess we have to move.
Because we saw a white blob.
Well, because my dog keeps... getting
oh,
out.
So yeah.
To keep my dog happy, I have to move.
To be honest with you, yeah, like, if Remy was, like, unsettled anywhere and, like, I had the money to move, I would move for yeah. my cat.
Yeah, before you got rid of your cat.
Absolutely. Oh, my 100%. God, I can't even imagine getting rid of my cat. She, okay, so, oh, a month later, she is, like, out for coffee with a friend.
Uh-huh.
And the friend says, you saw Mary the Wanderer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't quite know what the connection between White Blob and Mary the Wanderer is, other than the white dress of it all.
Right.
But the friend seemed pretty adamant that it's Mary the Wanderer, because a friend mentioned that she, like, would go looking for Mary the Wanderer, which, fun fact, Zoe, is something I've done too.
Okay.
I have biked around streets at night looking for Mary the Wanderer.
That sounds super safe.
I was accompanied by my father.
Okay.
Who
okay.
was also looking for Mary the Wanderer.
Okay, that's a little better.
We're on vacation. And so now Carolyn Butler, who did not believe in ghosts, fully believes that she saw Mary the Wanderer.
Okay.
And doesn't have a dog.
Oh.
I know. I really hate that part of the story. I wish things would have worked out for Boots. Now, another thing that came up.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting, it's a very non-detail specific sighting on a beach that I found at only one source, but to be honest, it's kind of the freakiest to mm-hmm. me, because I don't really think of Mary the Wanderer as malicious in any sense, so when I would right. be looking for Mary the Wanderer, I felt like I'm not looking for a scary ghost. I'm looking for a ghost who is searching for somebody. Because, like, that's her whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, she has the lantern up high because she is looking for Raymond the Fourth. She's right. looking for her lost lover. But this guy was on the beach one day. And he was sitting down on the sand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was alone. I think the beach was empty. This woman is walking down the beach but toward him.
Mm-hmm.
And she has wet hair. Her dress is wet. It's like a wedding dress that's wet.
Right.
Head is down. He can't see her face. As she passes him, she tilts her head to look at him. And she doesn't have a face.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so he's thinking, Mary the Wanderer, because white dress, it would make sense that she's dripping wet.
Right.
And so I'm surprised none of the other ghost sightings really mention her dripping wet, because that makes so much sense.
Uh-huh.
The lack of face thing creeped me out. Have you seen Haunting of Bly Manor?
No.
So there is a... I'm trying to think about spoilers. basically, there are ghosts in Bly Manor that don't have a face, because the idea is, like, the face fades with how long you're a ghost.
Right, okay.
But there's one in particular that walks out of a lake, mm-hmm. and so she has dripping wet hair, dripping dress, and with no face. And so when I read that account, I just immediately imagined the ghost from Haunting of Bly Manor, because it's so similar. Another sighting, could not find specifics about this, but I wanted to. Apparently a whole tour group saw her.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And I'm like Googling, okay, tour group sighting Mary the Wanderer, and nothing comes up other than the fact that apparently they saw her. And I'm like, okay, but details. Details. Quotes. Corroborating evidence. I don't know. Give me sources.
You're telling me there's a tour bus and nobody
tour
had their...
group.
Tour group. And nobody had their cameras out and, like, were taking pictures. Like, vlogging. I don't know. Like...
I did have a friend who went on a tour group in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
And she got videos of orbs on her phone.
Ooh.
Yeah. I need to ask her about that sometime.
Maybe she can be a guest on our show.
Oh, she would love it, I think. Okay, finally, and this is the biggest sighting.
Okay.
An airplane. specifically an Easter Airlines Martin 303.
I totally understand what that is.
It's an airplane.
Yes.
In 1953, it was flying into the airport on St. Simon's Island, the one kind of at the center of things, Malcolm McKinnon Airport.
Okay.
Remember, this was like, it's kind of like in the center of all this, actually, because Don Simmons and his wife were passing by the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of near slash, it's where Mulberry Grove, at least part of it, had been. And so this co-pilot, they're in communications with the people on the ground who can look out and see what's going on, and because they're trying to land a plane. And so literally they're like in the process of about to land a plane. The co-pilot over the mic freaks out. He's like, oh my God, stop. There's a woman.
Oh gosh.
There's a woman. And the people down there are like, there's no woman. And then he's like, there's a woman and a horse. And she is holding on. And they're like, there's really nobody, but he's, like, adamant. He's like, there is somebody there. And this is a co-pilot. This is a guy who's, like, partially in charge of flying the plane. And so, eventually...
Does the pilot see it? Or there's no...
That's not mentioned.
Okay.
Eventually, and by eventually, I mean this all had to happen really quick, because literally they were going down.
Right.
The people at the station, they said, okay, don't land here. We're diverting you. We're changing your end location. And I don't know if that meant they saw her, too.
Okay.
Or if it meant, listen, if the co-pilot's saying somebody's there, we're not going to risk it, and we're going to switch it.
Don't risk it for the brisket.
So they ended up... What?
I said, don't risk it for the brisket.
I would risk a lot of things for brisket. They ended up changing the flight to Jacksonville. Like, which is a good deal away. I mean, it's...
Jacksonville, South Florida, or Jacksonville, North Carolina?
Jacksonville, Florida. I don't know what Jacksonville, North Carolina is.
Well, I was born there, so...
Oh, shoot. I'm sorry.
That's the one I think of every time somebody says Jacksonville.
Okay. I'd never heard of that before.
It's Camp Lejeune.
Oh, okay. Cool.
You haven't heard of that either.
I think you might have mentioned it at some point.
Okay.
Anyway, that was the biggest sighting because it was enough that it changed the direction of this flight, you know?
Still, that's a good distance to divert a plane.
Well, I don't know what the air streams or the air traffic looked like. And also, I mean, like, okay, if you're talking about Jacksonville to St. Simons, airplane time, it's very little.
Yeah. But, like, I'd be a little PO'd if I expected to get off a plane in Georgia and I'm in Florida.
Would you rather hit a woman?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm kidding. For legal reasons, I am joking.
Okay, real quick, remember how I teased that I knew it was... Raymond the Fourth, but couldn't exactly tell you why yet?
Yes.
Okay. I found his grave.
Wow.
I found his tombstone. He was buried along with seven others in the Demir family in this family plot. And I knew it was him because his death date was September 14th, 1824, which is the day of the hurricane. And because of, you know, the newspaper that said he was... found in a boat, and that, all that kind of lined up, especially since it was already talking about the Demir family. I was reading through all this information, and I was thinking, well, why? Okay, so obviously they had seen Mary the Wanderer enough to be able to recognize her, to know who she was 120 years later, you know, this woman who was looking for her lost love. But at the same time, I was thinking, why is she showing up so concretely around... the 1940s at this specific point. Now, one thing I read said that it is known that her love was buried underneath the runway. And so I looked into it trying to find information, and it turns out that is the truth, but I don't think it's why she started showing up so concretely right then.
Okay.
So Raymond was buried underneath the airport before the airport was built, but in 1943... his grave was still there. His tombstone was still there before 1943. But at 1943, they had to expand the airport even more. So another Demir, whose name might have been Raymond, I can't remember, gave the go-ahead for them to move the eight tombstones to a plot in Christ Church Cemetery in a different place in the island. So I think, because Mary's whole thing is she's looking for her lost love, I think maybe she showed it more concretely at around that time in the 1940s into the 1950s because they moved the marker for his grave. They paved over it. He's still there.
But they just moved it.
But they moved it. And so maybe she's still looking for him, you know?
Yeah.
And the story ends on a kind of an interesting note. One thing to know about Mary is that she is now, like, really the most famous ghost of St. Simon's Island. She is used a lot for promotional materials. Like, any, basically, St. Simon's website, Glynn County website, is going to mention Mary the Wanderer. Because, you know, it is, like, such a touristy place. It is so developed. But there was one source I saw that said that locals believe if her road, which used to be a mile long, and is now about 560 feet long, is completely developed over, then she will stop existing. And so I find it interesting that she's kind of, the ghost of her, the memory of her, is contributing to what might be her ultimate disappearance.
Interesting.
Yeah. That is the story of Mary the Wanderer.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. Especially, but I know that last little bit you said, like, people believe that she'll disappear if she's paved over.
Mm-hmm.
But she appeared on the runway.
She appeared on the runway, but then again, like, maybe your ghost can be tied, maybe a ghost can be tied to something without necessarily having to be at it all the time.
Right.
But, like, she's known to kind of, like, go along that road, though it seems like maybe not just that road, too, because she's often, I think, at Gascoigne Bluff.
Okay.
Along the Frederica River shore. To be honest, every place in St. Simon says that, oh, there was a Mary sighting here.
Yeah.
Even though I don't always think that that's true, you know?
Well, there's at least four places that I know of that claim that, President Roosevelt.
Which one?
FDR. They say that FDR appears that
Franklin.
Franklin.
Calling him Fred?
Yeah, why was I calling him Fred? That sound felt wrong. FDR.
Well, FDR are the letters in Fred, plus an E.
True. True. But, yeah, I know, like, there's four places that claim that FDR's ghost appears there. There's, like, a bar in the White House. There's some other places. But, oh, and a hotel.
I went to, like, a place in Georgia where he kind of went and was in these, like, he had a pool there. Mm-hmm. And he would soak in it to kind of help with his polio.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the pool. I saw the toilet paper in his bathroom.
Gross.
It was really old. Wait. I don't know if they claim to be haunted. It wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, I feel like there's a rise in interest in haunted things and all of that. And maybe it's just because we have so many ghosts now.
But you feel like interest is rising. That's interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. And I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm getting more interested in it and I see it more.
Okay.
But I feel like more and more people are interested in it. Like, you can't go anywhere, in my experience. You know, any, like, tourist town you go to, you're gonna find ghost tours.
Yeah.
Like the very unsatisfying ghost tour that we took in Charleston.
I mean,
it was more of a historic tour.
Yeah, and, like, we went to Charleston specifically to have a spooky weekend.
Yeah.
And our tour guide was so nice.
She was great. She knew her history.
She knew her history, but she even told us on the tour that she actually wanted to be a history tour guide, but that they just start everybody out on the ghost tour. And so here's just this bright, bubbly woman. It's, like, dark outside. We're by a graveyard. We want to be scared. And it's just, you cannot be scared in her presence because she's just so, like,
a bubblegum blonde.
Yeah. And, like, in the greatest possible way.
Oh, definitely.
But, like, I was like, please just terrify me. I paid to be terrified.
And damn it.
I'm gonna be. We actually ended up trying to terrify ourselves.
We did?
Yeah.
We went to the graveyard. The middle area. The gazebo.
What? I'm sorry, what?
We went to the gazebo.
I remember going to the harbor where they said pirate ghosts were.
Yeah.
It's not a gazebo.
There's a gazebo in the little battleground area.
We didn't go to the gazebo, though.
But we went to the battleground area, and that's defined by the gazebo for me. With the cannons.
Yeah, the cannons. The cannons. To be honest, like, information would have been a lot easier to find if this was a Charleston story versus a St. Simon story.
Because true.
I kept looking up information, and it kept being like, here's a Charleston ghost story you were asking for. And I'm like, oh, God. Because I thought this was touristy enough that I would get a lot of information. Mm-hmm. And there ended up being some sources, but man, I just wanted like a, I wanted somebody to have gone and like found the facts. And now I have to go be the person to try to find the facts.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling like we're going to probably do like 12 episodes on Charleston alone.
Oh yeah. I mean, just because like there is so many hauntings going on.
Right.
And a lot of them are covered so well.
Yeah.
And plus, it's close enough that if we need to travel for, like, education purposes, we could.
We totally could for education purposes, yeah, you know, and write it off in our taxes for...
I have absolutely no idea how to do that.
I was Googling it this weekend. I don't know how to do that either.
Zoe, I was given a W-4 to fill out. I have no idea what to do.
I don't know that either.
Anyway.
Well, I guess that ends our first episode.
Yes. If you have feedback or your own ghost stories you would like to send us, please email Zoe. I don't know our email address.
It is hauntedhospitalitypodcast@gmail.com.
Are we sure? Or is that our website? Because no, I got confused.
The website is hauntedhospitality.wordpress.com.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so email us at hauntedhospitalitypodcast@gmail.com.
And visit our website, which is currently a WordPress site.
Oh, Lord.
But I hope that one day we can pay for our own domain. But right now it is hauntedhospitality.wordpress.com.
Yes. Leave us a review if you feel like it. Yes. Thank you for listening. We are going to have more of these coming at you in quick succession and then weekly. And we would just love to share these stories with you.
Well, stay spooky, my friends.
That's cute. Stay spooky.